Hey, it's Claire and James here. Before we get stuck into this week's episode, we just want to let you know that we're about to launch a first-of-its-kind tool that's going to help you identify where you might be holding yourself back from living your fullest potential at midlife.
We're naming it the Midlife Reset Audit. And what's incredibly exciting is that it'll offer you your personalized strategies that give you the most impactful wins, so you can quickly take back control of your body, mind, and life.
Now, we're just putting the finishing touches to it, making it the best it can possibly be. So if you'd like to be the first to take the audit, pop your name on the waiting list. Just go to themidlifementors.com/audit.
There can be a lot of change to our career at midlife. It might be that we have changed imposed on us through redundancy, or perhaps we want to shift direction. Maybe we want a slower pace of life, but don't know how or what that looks like, so we continue to feel overwhelmed and compromised. In this episode, I go solo and I talk to executive search consultant Sally Dunwoody about how to manage your career to future-proof for exactly these types of situations, and practical steps you could take if you find yourself already there. And we explore alternative avenues such as non-executive roles. I found it a fascinating conversation, and I hope you do too. Hi, I'm James Davis.
And I'm Claire Davis.
We're the Midlife Mentors, here to lift a lid on how to achieve health and happiness.
The balanced, no-nonsense way.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Midlife Mentors with me, James. I am flying solo today as we look at something that's an increasing problem, I think, in today's world, which is midlifers attempting to change or find new careers at this point in life. Before we get into that, just to update you on what Claire and I have been up to. Been busy behind the scenes as always. Obviously, getting ready for our retreat in Ibiza coming up in May. We've still got a couple of places left on that. So if you fancy joining us at Six Senses in Ibiza, get in touch. We'd love to see you there. We also have launched our new ebook, How to Reset Your Midlife Body Mind. So that's available now on our website. Finally, very excitingly, we're working on what we think might be the world's first midlife reset audit, which is going to be a questionnaire you can take. We'll show you areas for improvement in your life. And we're hoping that'll be ready in the next couple of weeks or so, but you can join the waiting list now again on the website. Right, without further ado, let me introduce our guest for today. So I'm joined by Sally Dunwoody, who is a partner at Warren Partners, which is an executive search firm. Hey, welcome, Sally.
Thank you very much, James. It's lovely to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you here. So, you know, executive search, I think of men in pinstripe suits on mobile phones. We can tell I was an 80s kid, right? Many people out, yeah. But just tell us what you do. What do you do?
Yeah, so look, we work with organisations and with people to do a bit of matchmaking. I suppose that's probably the best way of looking at it. We work with a broad range of clients who have a need to hire either executives or non-executives, and we work across both of those different areas, and our role is to help those organizations understand what they need, how making those hires will help them grow and develop their business in the ways that they want to, and then to equally work with candidates out in the marketplace who want to make a move, and to try and match the two together, not just from a skill perspective, but also, more importantly, from a cultural perspective.
Mm. So am I right in thinking that there are, or has it always been the case, that, you know, a lot of people in their late 40s, 50s kind of end up departing their careers either kind of voluntarily or pushed out by restructuring? Is this something we're seeing more of?
It's not something we're seeing more of, I wouldn't say. I think it's something that we've always seen. And yes, it does happen, and quite often it's not voluntary. And when it does happen, and it's not voluntary, it can be very, very challenging because it can often hit people at a time where they are reaching midlife, there's other stuff going on, and this happens on top of all of that, and it can be really difficult.
Mm. And I know, because I've worked with clients who've had this situation where they've been with one company for 20 plus years, and that's all they've known. And then suddenly the company's like, well, thank you, we've restructured, your role's now redundant. And they do find it hard to kind of gather themselves up. I think there's a kind of a bit of shock with, I think, a lot of people define themselves in terms of their job and their role. So there's a kind of bit of ego damage there, I guess, in the psychological sense, not ego. But also, talking to people that I know, they're like, well, what else will I do now? I've been in one organization for so long. What, how can I possibly find something else? How do they?
Yeah, it's really tough. And look, that specific example, someone that's been in an organization for their entire career, and then they suddenly find themselves no longer in that organization. That is a really, really challenging situation to find yourself in. But look, people do reinvent themselves from that. We see it. It does require, a massive reset. It requires a huge amount of grit and determination. It requires lots of lateral thinking, working your network, perhaps undertaking a sort of personal rebrand, perhaps undertaking a sort of reset in terms of what you want in the next stage of your life and career. Many of us, and I count myself absolutely in this, I literally sort of did my degree and took a graduate job and kind of just launched myself into what I called a sausage factory without even really thinking about it, to be honest with you. I just did it. And I didn't look left or right and didn't think about it. None of it was intentional, to be honest. None of it was intentional. It was all sort of quite accidental. How I ended up where I've got to today. And I think many people, when you unpick it a bit, it was like that. I'm not saying that everybody can afford to do this financially, but there does come a certain point, hopefully for a lot of folk, that they can actually press pause and think, okay, I'm now getting towards, my 50s, let's say, and maybe the next phase of my career doesn't have to look like the first phase of my career. And I can do something a little different. I can perhaps go after something that has more of a purpose, or with an organization that isn't simply about making profit, or something else. So it can be a very positive thing. And I suppose my advice to everybody would be, try not to get yourself in that situation. Try and reverse engineer that and think about things a little earlier, so that if you are in that situation, you are at least prepared to I suppose rethink where you're going to go, and you have already got a bit of a framework in place to do that.
And I guess that's great advice. I guess part of that is keeping an active network outside of your own organization, right?
Yes, it's absolutely that. And if you've worked in the same place for your entire career, or for a long part of your career, keeping up your network can be quite tough, because you sort of don't need it. And actually, I've had this conversation a lot with people when they are starting to think about what next, or maybe they're starting to think about a non-executive career, but they don't have one yet. And I encourage people and say, look, you know people, you must know people, go and reach back out to them. And quite often, the answer is, well, they're not going to want to hear from me, and I haven't spoken to them for 11 years. And I say, look, I promise you, 9 times out of 10, those people will be delighted to hear from you. And if you suggest just a simple coffee or a quick Teams call, if that's not possible, they'll be delighted, absolutely delighted. And these people come back to me and say, do you know what? You're absolutely right. So my first bit of advice would be, please don't feel worried about reaching out to people that you haven't reached out to for ages. We're all in the same boat. None of us maintain our networks very well. We're all guilty of that. So they are just as guilty as you are, and they will be, happy to hear from you. And then I think there's lots of other things we can do. There are panels we can put ourselves out on to speak on, for example. There are events we can go to. There are seminars we can go to. We can perhaps do courses. We can, you know, there's lots of stuff we can do to help increase not only our knowledge, but also our networks. And again, sometimes people say to me, look, I'm a real introvert. I don't want to go to an event and work the room. Well, I don't want to do that either. You know, I'm not actually an introvert, but I'm not necessarily an extrovert either. And mm-hmm. the thought of going into a room and having to come away with 50 new contacts would just put me off doing anything.
I can't stand networking events.
No, I can't. And I don't think many of us can, to be honest. But I can go to a place and talk to two or three folk during that speech or, you know, whatever's happening. I can, you know, connect with a few people, have a little chat, you know, have a coffee with someone. I can absolutely do that and come away with two or three meaningful contacts who themselves have their own network. And that is a much more tangible thing. And I think it's a much more achievable thing for most of us. So, you know, never think that you've got to go to a network event and come away with, well, in the olden days, it was like, how many business cards did you get? I guess now it's how many new people have you connected to on LinkedIn, you know? So there's lots of things that you can do. I think it just, like everything in life, it just requires you to be intentional about it and to set yourselves, you know, very achievable goals, which could be that you say, right, once a week, I'm going to reach out to one person and try and reconnect with them. We can probably all do that. We can probably all manage that, right?
Yeah, you touched on LinkedIn there, and that's quite interesting because I think, certainly the last time I was job hunting, I think LinkedIn was around, but in its infancy, it's a bit of a behemoth now. So how has that changed the landscape, I guess, for people like you, like executive search? Mm. And what should people be doing on this? Is it a good idea to like maintain an active profile on LinkedIn, like talking about what you do in your role, whether you're external or internal facing, so that there's some awareness of you?
Yes, definitely. I mean, LinkedIn is a fantastic tool for headhunters. I use it constantly. And quite often it's the first thing that we will turn to when we're thinking about an opportunity that we're trying to find people for. And that's not to say that I haven't got my own network and people that I'll speak to get referrals or just to even approach directly about an opportunity. But it's the showcase of the individual is absolutely on LinkedIn, and it's the go-to for all headhunters. And I would absolutely advise everybody who thinks that they might want to continue somehow in the world of work in inverted commas to have a really, you know, to have an update LinkedIn profile. Not overthink it, not agonize over it, not pay somebody to write it for you. Get a mate or someone to read it through, definitely. But I don't think you need to take it so far because mm-hmm. sometimes that will paralyze you. But I think it needs to be an accurate and fair representation of what you've done in your career. And I think, you know, as you progress and perhaps move into your sort of later career, perhaps also a representation of some of your values, some of the things that drive you, some of the things that interest you, and some of the things that tell more of a story than just your career. I think that's important as well. And, you know, a nice photo, but again, it doesn't have to be a professional photo. We've all got phones now. We can take a decent photo of ourselves and just keep it up to date. You'd be amazed how many people's LinkedIns aren't up to date. Mm. I never assume that what I'm seeing is what I'm going to get when I speak to that person. And quite often I'm right about that. It's not, you know, things have changed, moved on.
Yeah. I guess back when I was working, so many years ago, there was also a bit of a joke. People were like, oh, see, you've updated your LinkedIn profile, looking for a job. Is that still the case? You know, do employers think if you're active on LinkedIn, you're open to opportunity, shall we say? Or is it just, you know, people just do keep their LinkedIn updated now?
Look, you know, every employer should assume that their good people are constantly looking for other opportunities, scanning the horizon and being approached for opportunities. Okay. You know, because the good people, you know, people are. I have a whole range of people that I talk to about opportunities. Most of them say no, but they're glad to hear, you know, they're glad to hear of what's going on in the market. They want to hear what's going on in the market, what their competitors are doing. And you know, you absolutely shouldn't be afraid of that. You know, employers probably are quite nervous of their key people leaving, but they equally have to be working to keep their key people. So, you know, it's a two-way thing. And you know, you are responsible for your career, your brand, you know, your next steps. And so I would advise everybody to take ownership of that.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. Now, something that we talked about offline was, you know, yes, there's executive positions, but there's also people can think about non-exec roles. Could you just maybe talk a little bit about what those are and what's available for out there? So just give people a different perspective.
Yeah, sure. So non-executive roles can be a really interesting next step for people who have had an executive career and who don't want to just stop. I'm saying this sort of in inverted commas, don't want to just stop working when perhaps they retire. And there is a whole array of non-executive roles where you will sit on a board and you will be part of that business's strategy, decision making. You will be involved with the business, but in an advisory capacity. So you're not running that business. Mm-hmm. You're helping the people that are running that business make good decisions for that business. That could be strategy decisions, financial decisions. It could be around, you know, should you be, you know, making an acquisition? You will be advising on culture. You will be advising on technology. You will be advising on change, all of the things that businesses go through. But you'll be advising and operating in a non-executive capacity, which means that you're not running the business. So it's a great way of using all of your skills and experiences that you've gained over an executive career and still, you know, carrying on in some way, but not to the intensity that you did when you were an executive.
I was going to ask, they tend to be full-time roles, or are they, you do a certain number of days a week on typically?
No, they're part-time roles. They can vary, but they are part-time roles that could be probably between 2 to 4 days a month. And people that are really keen on doing this will have a portfolio of roles. So they may have 3, 4, or 5 of these. And you know, we'll operate in perhaps in different sectors, doing slightly different roles within these organizations. And some people do this before they exit their executive career. Mm-hmm. So people that feel that they want to do this as they retire will try and perhaps get a non-executive role towards the end of their executive career, as long as they've got time and their executive organisation will allow them to have that time to do that. Because you have to be present for board meetings. You have to, you know, you have to put in the work. You have to be released from your executive role a couple of days a month to do that.
Mm. I guess this comes back to, it would be a great way to think about aligning with your values. Now, you're saying as you get later in your career, rather than just going for the next opportunity, thinking, what are my values? What do I want to get from this?
Yeah.
Non-exec roles could really lend that. And also, like you said, if you were doing more than one, give you that diversity and variety as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you could absolutely work across, you know, different organizations, for example, that have not been in the sector that perhaps you've had your executive career in. When you look at most execs, they typically stay within one or two sectors. With non-execs, you can have great roles that are outside of the sector that you've maybe worked in. So that would give you a whole different, you know, set of experiences and a set of learnings. And you can have a very nice blended portfolio. Sometimes you have to, because there can be conflicts. So, you know, if you're an executive in a bank, for example, you probably can't go and get another non-executive role in another bank, because there would be competition and conflict there. Mm. So you'd have to look outside of your sector anyway.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, it sounds good, this non-exec director. I think I'd like to get involved in that. Something else I think is becoming more common, tell me if I'm wrong, is people taking career breaks later in life. If people have taken an extended break, maybe not like the 6 months to a year, but maybe taking 2 or 3 years out, is it harder for them to then come back, or have they still got marketable skills?
They've absolutely still got marketable skills, but I think absolutely it is difficult to come back from a sort of 2 or 3 year break. Mm-hmm. Again, It is about being, I suppose, realistic, number one, and number two, kind of intentional. And, you know, being realistic around, well, what can I do now? And, you know, where is my currency of experience? There are some sectors that move so fast that 3 years out of them, you would be, you know, a little bit behind. There are others that move slower. And if you've managed to keep up and you've maintained your network during that time, it would probably be a bit easier. But look, many people do take time out. People take time out to have kids. People take time out for other reasons. I took 10 years out of the headhunting world, moved to France and set up a campsite randomly. And then when we sold that business, because I had always kept up my network, not intentionally, just because everybody were my, they were all my mates, you know, I'm going to be really honest, it was because this was a friendship group.
It was a social thing,
as opposed to a network. But, you know, when I sold my business, I then went straight back into headhunting. And, you know, stuff had absolutely changed. The tech had moved on. Companies didn't exist anymore. Sectors, you know, the financial services industry that I'd worked in before, for example, had become very, very focused on tech, and fintechs had born, and, you know, challenger banks had come about and all of this sort of thing. And I had to, you know, get up to speed pretty quickly. But I managed it. So I think if you were thinking about taking a significant period of time out, which, by the way, I think is a great idea for anybody, then I think you need to try and see a little bit around the bend as to what's going to happen after that. What would I like? It may not be the thing that happens, but what would I like to happen after that? And what can I do now to make sure that I can succeed after this? And I think a lot of that comes down to the network thing again, which we do seem to keep talking about. And also just thinking about, you know, how do I stay current? How do I keep up to date with my sector or my functional area?
Okay, great. Great advice there. Sally, if someone's listening to this now and they're thinking, oh, you know what? I do think I want to change my job. I'd love a new challenge. Or God forbid, you know, they're like, oh, I know my company's going to make swinging cuts. I'm going to be out there. What are just some basic tips? How could they prepare? How could they get ready?
Yeah. Look, I think, and this is in no particular order, I think you need to take a long, hard look at, let's call it your personal brand, which for most people will be dusting off the CV and having a look at their LinkedIn and talking to some of their friends and their peers and, you know, having a good, long, hard look at yourself. What are the things that I'm good at? What are the things that I know I'm not good at? Where's my sweet spot? Where's the value add that I can bring to a new organization? And you need to craft and write your CV and your LinkedIn around that. So I think it's about sort of being honest with yourself and sort of taking a step back. And that's why I say get some advice from peers or friends or people that you trust that can sort of help you do that. I think that would be the first thing that I would do. The next thing I would do would be go to my network and go and talk to organizations like ourselves. You know, most people will have had contact with headhunters and recruitment organizations during their career. Again, we're always really happy to hear from you. So don't worry if you haven't been in touch with your favorite recruiter for however long, it doesn't matter. And you know, get out there, have those coffees, have those conversations, let people know that you're on the market again or that you might be on the market again. Definitely. And I think also it's probably the moment to think, you know, what do I want to do? If you have the luxury from a financial point of view to say, well, I can take a bit of a pause, I can maybe pivot into something else, I can maybe use this as an opportunity to get into a new organization or sector, then that's probably a good time to do that. I spoke with a candidate this week and he told me that he had decided when he wanted to get a new role that he was going to kind of do it himself. And so he did a very forensic analysis of his network and companies that he thought he wanted to go and work in. And he picked off some companies that he felt his skill set would be really, really well suited to. Some of the things that he'd done, he thought would be very useful in these organizations. And he whittled it down to about 10. And he hand wrote, it's really old school, but he hand wrote a letter to the chair of these 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think only a couple actually responded and said, you know, yes, this is great. And we're kind of looking. But it was so, and he then got a job.
Old school approach really worked.
Old school approach, and he got the job as a CEO of an organization. And, you know, it was a highly targeted approach, which was, you're this organization, you are heading in this direction, I've got this skill set, I've done this, and this is where I can add value. And that, you know, that was a really interesting story to hear, actually.
Yeah, I love that. That's kind of heartwarming. To hear that yeah, people can still do it the old way.
And research
what you want to do, find the key decision makers, send them a letter.
Yeah, exactly. And look, it was quite forensic. It did take him time. You know, he had to look at organizations. He had to think about his skill set. He had to try and anticipate where they might be going and where there could be a good, you know, a good match. But that's something that we can all do.
Fantastic. Sally, thank you so much. It's been really illuminating. If people want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
They can find me at Warren Partners. We have a website, warrenpartners.co.uk. I'd love to hear from anybody. If I can ever give any advice, then, you know, myself or any of my colleagues are delighted to do so.
Great. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Sally.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Midlife Mentors with Claire and James Davis.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from you. So drop us a line at info@themidlifementors.com with any questions or topic suggestions.
And make sure you join us on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. You can find us under The Midlife Mentors. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. And just before you go, we wanted to remind you that the waitlist for the Midlife Reset Audit is now open.
You can be the first to take this revolutionary new tool to helping you live your healthiest, happiest midlife by signing up at themidlifementors.com/audit.